Let's try and make sense of this heavyweight mess. First of all, you got Tyson Fury coming out accusing Anthony Joshua, Dylan White, and Oleksandr Usyk of being bums and cowards, claiming none of them want to fight. Eddie Hearn responds by calling Tyson Fury a walking contradiction, and he implies that Fury doesn't want to fight Usyk next. Then Usyk's manager, Igis Klimas, comes out and says that Fury is the one holding up the wagon. I assume he's talking about negotiations for the Undisputed fight. Then you got Mike Coppinger via ESPN saying that a deal was in place for Fury to fight Usyk in Saudi Arabia, with the Saudis putting up an enormous amount of money, and that included step-aside deals for Anthony Joshua and Dylan White. But he says the deal fell apart after parties attempted to renegotiate at the 11th hour. But he doesn't specify which parties they were, because there are obviously multiple parties involved here. Then you had TalkSport coming out saying it was Anthony Joshua and Dylan White who rejected the step-aside deals. They say that Dylan White was offered £5 million, while AJ was offered £15 million to step aside. In American dollars, I guess that's about, what, $7, $8 million for Dylan White and about $20 million for Anthony Joshua. So who's telling the truth? Who's lying? Because they can't all be telling the truth, right? Well, I found it interesting that Eddie Hearn implied that Tyson Fury doesn't want to fight Usyk next, but rather he wants some type of interim bout in March. So what, he feels like he's not ready for Usyk right away, that he needs to be sharper? And personally, I think that's a good idea, because this is not Deontay Wilder. As big a risk as it was for Tyson Fury to go in there when he was ill-prepared against Deontay Wilder in the first fight, he took the chance, I have to imagine, partly because Wilder is so technically poor. Oleksandr Usyk is not technically poor. This is a guy who it's not easy to box with. You're going to have to put it on him, and he can make you look clumsy. And as good a boxer as Tyson Fury is, he's looked clumsy in plenty of fights. So I think it's sensible for Tyson Fury to want an interim bout before going in there against Oleksandr Usyk, if that is indeed true, assuming it's not just Eddie Hearn talking out of his rear end. He also says that he didn't see a long-form contract for the step-aside deal regarding Anthony Joshua and perhaps even Dylan White. And obviously you can accept that. You can understand why he would be hesitant to agree any step-aside deal if he hasn't seen a long-form contract, because at the end of the day, he does want a guaranteed shot for Anthony Joshua at the winner of Fury versus Usyk. So again, make of that what you will. As far as what Igis Klimas said, Usyk's manager, saying that is Fury holding up the wagon? Is that the interim fight that Igis Klimas is referring to? Or is it just Klimas saying something in retaliation because of the fact that Tyson Fury insulted his fighter? Also, as I've already said, Mike Coppinger via ESPN talking about parties attempting to renegotiate at the 11th hour, but not specifying which parties they were. And what did they try to renegotiate? Was it, as Eddie Hearn seems to imply, Tyson Fury trying to put an interim fight into the equation, where he didn't want to go straight into the Usyk fight, he wanted an interim fight? Is that why it fell apart? Was that the renegotiation at the 11th hour? Or was it the money that Dylan White and Anthony Joshua were being offered? Was it them who tried to renegotiate at the 11th hour and get more money out of the situation? That's certainly what Tyson Fury has tried to suggest and imply on social media. But, you know, Tyson Fury is not exactly impartial in this situation here. And Tyson Fury is very good at manipulating the public and getting them to believe things by being suggestive in one way or another. And I'm talking about believing things which aren't necessarily true. Okay. With that being said, since Tyson Fury has a history of that type of behavior, who's to say that Eddie Hearn hasn't taken a leaf out of his book and is trying to give Tyson Fury a taste of his own medicine, and that Eddie Hearn isn't actually the one who's trying to mislead the public here? Again, I don't know. I'm an outsider looking in, trying to make sense of this heavyweight mess like the rest of you are. Personally, I don't trust any of them. I think it could be any of these guys that's trying to mislead the, or maybe all of them to one degree or another, trying to mislead the public and so on and so forth. Now, the claim that Tyson Fury wants an interim fight before going in there against Usyk, to me, that has a ring of truth to it. I want to hear if Tyson Fury is going to respond to that and whether he's going to deny that. But to me, that sounds like something Tyson Fury would want to do again, because as confidently as Tyson Fury talks and his fans, he's a boxing man. He's very smart. He manages his career very well, and he knows how good Usyk is. I know that, again, his fans are all boisterous and confident, you know, puffing their chest out. The Gypsy King will destroy anybody at any time, at any place. Yeah, I get all that. But Fury's more sensible than that, despite all the bluster. He knows how dangerous Usyk is for him, and he wouldn't want to go in there ill-prepared. He wouldn't want to wing it like he did with Deontay Wilder in their first fight. So to me, that has a ring of truth to it. Again, that's just my interpretation. That's just my my view. Doesn't mean I'm right, because again, we're all outsiders looking in. Let me know what you guys think in the comments below. What is going on here? Is it Anthony Joshua and Dillian Whyte being greedy? Is it Tyson Fury not really wanting the Usyk fight next? Smoke and mirrors from him? Maybe it's a combination of all of these things. Maybe it's Eddie Hearn who doesn't really want the step-aside fights for his fighters for whatever reason. You guys let me know what you think in the comments below. As it stands right now, it looks like we're going to get Tyson Fury versus Dillian Whyte next. According to Eddie Hearn, the purse bids are going to go ahead today. And that's interesting in itself, because does that mean that the split has been resolved and that Dillian Whyte is going to get more than the 20% the WBC are currently offering him? Or does it mean that Dillian Whyte has decided to bite the bullet and take the 20%? And Eddie Hearn's hoping to bid high enough whereby even if Dillian Whyte is only on 20%, it'll still be enough of a percentage to give him close to the $10 million he was asking for. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully by the end of the day, we have some clarity again. Let me know what you guys think in the comments below. And if you've got any more information, please leave links and enlighten us all. This Filip Hrgović situation really is a sorry state of affairs. The amount of fighters who have turned down the opportunity to face Hrgović in a final eliminator is just getting ridiculous now. To be fair, with Tony Yoka, he apparently, ostensibly wanted the fight and was willing to take it, but he did have some type of deal in place with Martin Bukoli, and his team have taken exception to Yoka trying to go in a different direction and fight Hrgović. And that apparently is the reason why Yoka can't go through with that particular fight and is going to have to reschedule the Bukoli fight, which isn't a bad fight in itself, but I'm sure we all would have preferred the Hrgović fight. So now the IBF have gone down the list and they have offered the Hrgović fight to Andy Ruiz and also to Murat Gassiev. As far as I'm aware, please correct me if I'm wrong, because I haven't read this from an official source, but this is something I've heard. I've heard that Gassiev is injured and therefore he's turning down the fight. Isn't Gassiev, he's not promoted by Sauerland, is he? Why do I feel like he had some type of association with Sauerland before? I don't know. But obviously we know that Hrgović is co-promoted by Sauerland. So if they were both with Sauerland, it would make the fight easier. But who knows what's going on there. As far as Andy Ruiz, he's a PBC fighter. They don't tend to let their guys go in there against really dangerous opponents unless there is a massive incentive for them to do so. And I'm talking about really dangerous opponents who are with rival promoters and rival networks. They don't tend to allow them to do that unless there's a massive incentive. And in this case, I can't imagine there is a massive incentive. Where is Sauerland going to come up with the money to pay the likes of Andy Ruiz, who has had some monster paydays in his career thus far? Where are they going to get the money for that? Because the money that they offered Michael Hunter was chicken change. Andy Ruiz wouldn't even get one leg out of bed for that type of money. Now, obviously, I'm not expecting them to only offer Andy Ruiz the kind of money they offered Michael Hunter. But nevertheless, to get anyone to step in the ring with someone as dangerous as Filip Hrgović, you're going to need to pay top dollar. You're going to need to pay Andy Ruiz the kind of money that he would get for a world title fight, in all honesty, to step in there against Filip Hrgović. So let's see what happens. I would be amazed if Andy Ruiz actually took the fight. Now, when he was still with ESPN and he was in obscurity, then at that stage, I could have seen him taking the Filip Hrgović fight. Andy Ruiz is a warrior. But right now, you've got Al Heyman, who has massive influence over his career, the way it's managed and what have you. And because of that, I just don't see it happening. I hope I'm wrong. You know them ones, just like with the Tony Yoka, Filip Hrgović fight. When we thought we were going to get that, I was so happy to be wrong because I didn't expect Tony Yoka's team to allow it. And same situation here. I would love to be wrong. I would love PBC to turn around and say, yep, we'll let Andy Ruiz fight Filip Hrgović, no problem at all. Let me know what you guys think in the comments below. Will it happen, or will the IBF keep on having to go down the line and pick somebody else? You see, this is the thing about the IBF, as opposed to the other sanctioning bodies, is they expedite their mandatories much more quickly than the other sanctioning bodies. And they're serious about it. They enforce mandatories. I like that about them. You know, but because they're like this, because they're very strict about their rules and they want to get their mandatories done as quickly as possible, you get a lot of fighters turning down their mandatories, you know, because the IBF just don't care about anybody's plans. They're coming straight in to enforce their mandatories, no matter what you think you're doing in your career. So that leads to this kind of thing. I mean, when Kell Brook was IBF welterweight champion several years ago, you had a similar situation there where multiple people were turning down the opportunity to fight Kell Brook in a mandatory challenge. So, you know, that is what that is. Let me know what you guys think in the comments below. If Andy Ruiz did decide to take the Hrgović fight, if a miracle occurred, how do you see that fight going? Do you think Ruiz would beat Hrgović, or do you think Hrgović would have enough to get the win over Andy? Let me know. According to Chris Mannix, who of course is a presenter on DAZN, Demetrius Andrade intends to vacate his 160-pound WBO world title and move up to 168. He says that Andrade's team is working on completing a deal to face Zach Parker, with the winner to become the mandatory for the super middleweight title held by Canelo Alvarez. Now, I think this is a good move for Demetrius Andrade because nothing is happening for him at middleweight. He's been calling out everybody. He's been calling out Golovkin. He's been calling out the Charlos, calling out Canelo, obviously turned up to his press conference, but Canelo is not going to come back down to 160 again. So he's going to have to go looking for Canelo if he really wants that fight. And Canelo right now is campaigning at 168, 175, up and down between the two weight divisions. And so taking on Zach Parker, who is, of course, a British fighter, for the right to face Canelo Alvarez is a sensible thing to do. If people are not going to willingly fight you, you're going to have to force them to fight via mandatories. So, yeah, I think it's the right thing for Demetrius Andrade to do. I've seen some people here tweeting that Andrade's ducking somebody at 160. I find that to be a little comical because Andrade is what? Early mid-30s now? The clock is ticking. He's never had a big defining fight. He's never had the opportunity to face one of the elite. So why would he hang around, you know, having fights against these obscure, and these might be good fighters, but at the moment, they're obscure fighters at 160. Why would he hang around and do that when the clock is ticking and he's looking for the elite fighters, you know? So I don't think he's ducking anybody. I just think he realizes that he needs to get a move on in his career and he needs to take drastic action. And this could be a great opportunity for him against Zach Parker. Now, Parker is a big guy, a strong guy, but he isn't somebody who I think would be beyond Demetrius Andrade in terms of being able to beat. I think Andrade, you know, he had issues with Liam Williams. We all saw that. He got hurt several times. But when he expects a fight to be tough, he tends to perform better. He's one of those kind of guys. When he's not expecting a fight to be so tough, he can underperform, which I did think he did a little bit against Liam Williams. Nevertheless, Zach Parker is a different kind of fighter to Liam Williams. He isn't as tall. He's taller than Liam Williams. Liam Williams isn't as tall as Zach Parker. Parker isn't quite as aggressive, isn't quite as relentless. I think Andrade would have more time, more space to move around and do his thing. And he'd have a bigger target to aim at. that he had with Liam Williams. So I would expect Andrade to win that fight and perhaps become the mandatory challenger for Canelo Alvarez, assuming Canelo Alvarez even keeps hold of that WBO belt, because it could be a situation where Alvarez decides to relinquish and move up to 175 pounds. And then what's Andrade going to do at that point? He's going to be in a very similar situation to the one he was in at 160, where the rest of the division is with PBC, and therefore he's frozen out. So at this stage, I don't know when Andrade's contract is up with DAZN, but he might want to look at signing with PBC, in all honesty. He might want to look at doing that. I'm not sure why he hasn't considered that before. Perhaps he has. And obviously, I'm somebody that's been very critical of PBC and the way they carry on. But at the end of the day, it's a business. It's Andrade's boxing career. So this is not about me saying, oh, to hell with PBC and nobody should ever sign with him. No. I think a fighter should go wherever he can get the best deal and wherever the opportunities are, whether it's with Al Haymon PBC, whether it's with ESPN, Top Rank Bob Arum, whether it's with DAZN Eddie Hearn, wherever the best opportunities are, you should go there. And right now, the best opportunities for Andrade, if he can't force a mandatory challenge against Canelo Alvarez, the best opportunities may be with PBC. And even with the Alvarez situation, Canelo Alvarez, you know, is he going to be with DAZN anytime soon again? I'm going to guess that he's actually going to have his next fight with PBC. Rumor has it that he was actually paid something like $50 million for his last fight against Caleb Plant once all the pay-per-view figures came in and what have you. Crazy. Can DAZN really match that money right now? So, again, even if Andrade gets the Canelo fight, he might have to go to PBC to get it. Let's see what happens. Let me know what you guys think in the comments below.